broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Well, like they say, you know, you get what you pay for.
By itself, this simple recognition.
You actually fired a guy for wearing it.
I mean, the guy is, he is who he is, and he does a great job.
He indicates that she had been rear-ended.
I find him terrifying.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. This is a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where we go anywhere. We even go places other talk shows wouldn't dare go. To bring you this very fine entertainment we bring you each and every night, President Obama, as you know, delivered his State of the Union speech tonight. How do you think it went? We're going to be talking tonight with Don Mixa from the University of Washington, as well as Dr. Ron Tarner from the Mountain Meadow Observatory in Colorado, about how the government spending stimulus, the Obama plan, the Obama health care plan, the Republican plan, how all of that is going to affect the average American. And we'll tell you also tonight, the 10 nastiest, dirtiest hotels in the country, the 10 filthiest places. You like this stuff, bud. That will be on our list of, you know, 10, you know, of the, we always do lists of things, and it always has something to do with hygiene. I don't know what that is. Anyway, plus a Utah State trooper's in hot water for hitting a 53-year-old woman in the head after a traffic stop. Don Mix and Ron Tarner coming up, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, our affiliate spotlight tonight, WWRL 1600 AM, our great affiliate in New York City, and KPVR 94.1 FM in Bowling Green, Missouri, all on our Phil Hendry Show network. And our website is philhendryshow.com, live streaming video of the show right now. Don't forget, baby, soon to come, that beautiful Phil Hendry tequila shot glass, man, is going to be in our merchandise store. And we are working on a whole new video look for our program. You know, we've had our video cast for over a year. Brother, wait till you see what we got in store for you when it comes to the 21st century. This is what it's all about, taking a radio show and expanding it into, this thing, man, you're going to be able to hear outer space on this thing. Don't worry about it. All right, 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the Phil Hendry Show. So President Obama was on television tonight with a State of the Union address. We're going to talk to a couple of guys tonight, both of them men who rely heavily on public dollars for the jobs that they do. Don Mix is going to join us, and I know that you're en route, Don, tonight to Portland, Oregon by car. We thank you for joining us. Don is a professor of engineering at the University of Washington. How are you tonight?
I'm very good, Phil. I appreciate you having me on your program.
And how's the drive?
It's very relaxed. Not the one driving, fortunately. It's my partner, Bill Stams, from our engineering department is driving with us, and we're on our way down there to a teacher conference.
Did you watch the president's speech?
I did watch part of the speech, and we had to leave, but I saw essentially, I think, the better part of his speech. I thought the first half of the president's speech, well, I thought was very powerful, and I think the president made the point very, very clear that we've got to get the country up and working again. This is the number one priority, to get this country working again.
And did you took that away from the speech. It's funny, I heard him, yes, I did hear him mentioning jobs. He also talked a lot about spending and how we have to cut spending, but he did say that there has been stimulus money for these projects, public or otherwise, that he feels are doing very well.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and that's the primary interest that I have is in much of the stimulus spending for some of this infrastructure, and we're talking about buildings, infrastructure, having to do with bridges, having to do with freeways and rail traffic, which I think the president mentioned, Phil. In your state, in California, you're going to have a high-speed rail going from Summit area, Los Angeles, to Las Vegas, up north of San Francisco, and right now they've started another spur to that.
Is that the only part of what other high-speed rail is going in around the country?
Well, there are projects, I think, originating all over the country in terms of revolutionizing rail traffic and commuter rail traffic and passenger rail traffic, and it's going at full speed, full steam ahead.
Now, one of the criticisms about the high-speed rail in California is that the project they're working on, and this is what a lot of people are criticizing about President Obama's entire stimulus package and what it does in terms of public works, this link, this rail line, starts in a town and goes to another town, and neither town is a very big center of commerce. It's going to, I think, a town in Northern California that, frankly, has been hit by this recession, high unemployment, no jobs. Why are these rail lines and these rail spurs starting in these out-of-the-way places?
Well, I think you have to understand, Phil, the primary goal is to get people working. Where these rail lines are going, obviously they're going to go from point A to point B. They're going to have a purpose, but for now, what we want to do is focus the attention of our workers on just going to the spot where the job is and looking at the job and telling people this is what you're working on. This is a rail line. This is a series of tracks and other mechanics that obviously are needed for a train, and you orient people that way. And this is being done all around the country where you say to people, let's just get them working, and we'll worry about explaining to them.
Well, what? In other words, yeah, we want to get people working. What about the taxpayers, the people that are footing the bill, not just the workers, but anybody who looks at a project and says, this is a high-speed rail line, it's just a stretch of line that doesn't go anywhere, it's out in the middle of nowhere. What do you say to them?
Well, I say to them, with the greatest of respect, this is something that the engineering people understand. This is something that those of us that are laying down the initial track locale and the maps, we understand this. It's probably something that's over their heads. Here is a piece of track. A train goes on this track. At some point, people are going to get on the train, and you start there. We've got a lot of people, Phil, that have been out of work for so long that they may be disoriented, and so we need to tell them.
So I just want to know. We have this, for instance, bridge in Alaska, the bridge to nowhere. This was Sarah Palin's, as the governor of Alaska, it was a project of hers. People have criticized her for this so-called bridge to nowhere. How do you defend a railroad track to nowhere?
Well, the Palin bridge to nowhere was in Alaska, which is very, very far north. There's hardly any real populated areas. It was pretty ridiculous idea to have a bridge that goes into that goes even further north, and the further away you go, the further away from humanity you get, and the further away from humanity you get, the further reason you have for building anything. And so the Sarah Palin bridge was it was indeed a bridge to nowhere. These tracks are not going anywhere right now, but what the purpose of them is not to build a train track, it's to get people to work. And to get them up to the stretch of rail and say, here is what you're working on. It is a train track. Trains go on it. And get them oriented. And then what we can do, build now, and you get the details done later than you do it around the country. We've got country, all around the country, we've got rail that's going in. And you say to people, get out there. Here's your shovel, here's your pick, here's your hammer, whatever you need. Well, what is it? Well, that's not important. President Obama said he's going to put you to work. He's putting you to work. Just go to work.
And well, explaining to people what it is they're doing is important, right?
Of course it's important, but at that level, Phil, I'm not going to take time to explain to every single guy that's digging a ditch for me what a high-speed rail train is. We have very few people that ride the train. A lot of people are not familiar with trains, how they work, where they go, who rides on them, who doesn't ride on them. And at some point I have to explain that to them, I guess, but I'm not going to take time right now to do it.
All right, our number 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL, as we talk to Don Mixa from the University of Washington on the high-speed rail, one of many projects that the government is investing in using the stimulus money, and others, of course, Don, are public buildings and so forth, and a lot of it having to do with infrastructure and bridges. Well, tell me a little bit more about this project. You say you're building a high-speed rail. What are the details as to the ultimate destination of these tracks?
Well, again, you don't need the details. You just need to know that people are going to get working. When you ask me for details,
I'm just curious, because again, there's people that'll be working on them, but there's taxpayers who would like to know just exactly if I want to avail myself of this.
Well, if you wanted to avail yourself of the high-speed rail, you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, Phil, when we complete it, then you're going to the public will be informed of where it's going and from what city to what city. But these questions, I think, beg the bigger question, which is, are you working? Yes, I am. All right. Take a look at what you're working on. What does it look like to you? And the worker might say, well, it looks like rail. You're right. And what kind of rail do you think it is? And they may not know. And so you have to kind of go slowly with them. You start out at point A, and you go on a high-speed rail, and you end up at point B, and then point C, And that's what we tell our workers. Now, we figure out where the points are after we get it funded.
And do you know, with the money that we're getting now to pay these workers to get the rail lines going, where are they going?
We've got a couple of ideas. We've had some very good ideas. Bill Kentley, who I think you know, Phil, had a great idea to have a high-speed rail system all the way to Las Vegas. Now, some people don't like that because they think it's a little inappropriate during a recession. But I don't think it's inappropriate at all. I think you've got a lot of traffic, a lot of leisure traffic goes between L.A. and Las Vegas. The other was between L.A. and San Francisco. There is a tension between Los Angeles and San Francisco, as you know, that people in San Francisco don't want to have anything to do with L.A. and vice versa. And, some people say, well, why would you even put a rail system between two cities that hate each other's guts?
Well, I wouldn't say that. The L.A. and San Francisco hate each other's guts. I've always said that San Francisco is a place where L.A. loves to visit, but the feeling isn't mutual.
Well, you know, whatever way you want to. I mean, I come from Los Angeles originally. I wouldn't go to San Francisco if you paid me $1 million. But high-speed rail between the two cities, that might help thaw the ice a little bit. But I don't know. What we want to do is just get people out there working on this. And we'll tell them later, because you are dealing with people that are working on a railroad. If you go back to the 19th century, and you remember the Chinese that we brought in, are you going to explain to them, this is a transcontinental railroad? Of course, you're not going to do that, because these are Chinese, and they're living in tents and so forth. So.
But we're not talking about Chinese. We're talking about American citizens.
Oh, no, I understand that, but there's only so much you can tell them.
All right. Don Mixa joining us from the University of Washington here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show as we talk about President Obama's State of the Union speech and about the spending on infrastructure, the spending on public programs from the stimulus money. The president referred to high-speed rail, and Don is talking to us about the high-speed rail projects. Here in California, we have a rail line that's starting that goes from one place to another place, and it's out in the middle of nowhere. So we really don't even know where this train track is headed. We just know, in the words there of Don, people are being put to work on it. What do you think? 877-876-PHIL. Do we need to know where the railroad even goes before we start building it? 877-876-7445. Next hour, we've got Dr. Ron Tarner here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Our number is 877-876-7445. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night here until 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. With me is Don Mixa. Professor Mixa is talking to us about high-speed rail, these high-speed rail projects that have been promised by the federal government as a means of public works, stimulus money, and employment. Can you give me some idea, first of all, where the California rail line is? And then I want to get to some phone calls. And then others?
Well, the California rail line would be, I think it starts in Boron, and it goes up. It does traverse some of Death Valley, some of the desert, and it goes into a town. I don't know the name of it. And again, I think what you're asking, Phil, is I can understand it'd be of interest, but it really doesn't. It's not that important right now. What's important is we've got to get workers up there and tell them, all right, let's get them oriented. This is a railroad station. This is a train.
Can I ask you a question? Because this was in a local press. What's the Chuck Manson Express?
That was an unfortunate comment made by someone who no longer works with us.
Why did they call it that?
Because the train went by Barker Ranch, which was where the Manson family had stayed. Someone had made a very, very unfortunate, very off-color joke, which is obviously completely inappropriate. And we apologize for that.
All right, our number is, and I think I lost a little bit of the phone line here. Let me get him back, Bud. There is, are you there, Professor?
I am.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. We have James in Mobile listening on WAVH. James, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, sir. I think this guy's ridiculous. They're building a rail in the middle of nowhere, wasted taxpayer money, and once they get it built, it's not going to be feasible to make the income to keep it going. Thus, the government or the taxpayers might keep subsidizing it until they do hook it up to a place where there's commerce to keep it busy. He thinks we're he's arrogant. He thinks we're an idiot.
No, I do not think you're an idiot, sir. We have to build the train. We have to build the rail first in order to get people working. The primary goal is to get a man
put people working where there's commerce to keep the rail in business.
There is commerce. There's commerce where the rail line is.
Why is it, let me ask you this, why not build it in a large, in a populated area?
We don't want to build it in a populated area because it's slow. First of all, construction in those areas takes a great deal of time. Building rail is very, it interferes with a lot of business, and we're not sure that's where we want it to go. You understand? We want to put the rail somewhere where if we change our mind on where we want it to go, it won't matter.
In the bigger cities, there's a lot of unemployment, too. Once the rail is built and gets started and can make money to keep it going, then you extend it to places where there's no business to the build.
Well, James, if it was
not the other way around.
Respect it. If it was that easy, then we would put you in charge of it. And I'm not saying you're not a smart man, but I'm saying obviously you realize there's other issues involved. We've got to get people out there who've never worked on a railroad before. These are unemployed men. All right? They don't
know how to lay rail. But I'm a
cop. No, I'm saying we've got to get people out there. We have to get people out there who know how to
figure it out what to do.
Do you understand that I've got to teach people how to put a railroad in? They don't even know how to do it.
Well, what are you talking about? The engineers do.
Yeah, the engineers do, but 150 years ago, we brought Chinese over here. Well, we don't do that anymore. Now we have Americans. But there's not a lot of difference between our Americans today, and I say this with great respect, and these Chinese that they shipped in, because their knowledge is about the same, and so you have to show them this is a rail spike. Do you understand what I'm saying? So there's an educational curve. You know, otherwise, if James wants us to, we could go to China and start shipping more of them in. But we won't. That's, you know, it's ridiculous. Would you agree, James?
The senators in their area.
Sir, you really got to quit thinking small. Quit thinking small.
They get elected again. That's all this is.
That's how you feel about it, James, that this is some kind of a thing to just pump money into a local congressional district?
Oh, he's talking about pork.
Oh, yeah. Well, I can guarantee it's no. Where are they going to keep the rail going once they build it?
Exactly. All right. Let me take another call. Thank you very much. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Ray in Salt Lake City. Go ahead, Ray. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Don Mixa.
Okay, so what he's saying, if I'm understanding correctly, is it's all about putting people to work. Where it goes and where it stops is irrelevant, correct?
Not necessarily, but right at this particular point, yes, that's where it goes.
So what's the difference?
Yes, sir.
So what's the difference in going right outside of L.A., hiring 4,000 people, telling them to dig a hole 12 feet deep when it's dug, tell them to fill it back in, pay them for it, and you're doing the same thing? You're creating jobs where there are no jobs and there's no reason for a job.
No, because there is a reason for this job. It's a railroad
track. What is the reason to go from point A to point B where neither one of them are highly populated areas and neither one of them are places people want to go to?
Because we want to get the project going and then decide where we eventually want it to go.
Well, if you don't know where you want it to go, what's it doing? Why are you laying track out in the middle of the San Joaquin Valley?
Not to mention the fact that high-speed rail in no country has ever been profitable. It's always been a losing
proposition. Well, you don't know what you're... That's what you get for listening to Alex Jones. But what I'm telling you is...
Okay, let's not do the cheap shots.
Well, I'm just telling the gentleman that, yes, it is profitable. And number two,
okay,
we can lay a piece of... I can look at...
China
I can lay a piece of rail through your backyard.
Anywhere in Europe.
I can, no, that's not true. I can lay a piece of rail through your backyard and then decide, I'm not going to do it, but I can then say it can go anywhere. I can take it anywhere I want it to go. If I put it down in L.A. or in Salt Lake City, that means it's got to go to L.A. or Salt Lake City. Maybe I don't want to do that.
All right. Well, we'll be back with more calls. Thank you very much, Ray. We're talking to Don Mixa about high-speed rail and other stimulus projects. 877-876-7445. World-famous Phil Hendry. Show.
Phil Hendry.
Why? Send me more calls like that.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Tonight we had President Obama speaking to the nation on the State of the Union, actually speaking to the Congress. That's technically and congressionally what's called for, but now we televise it, of course, and he speaks to the entire nation. And we saw the State of the Union tonight. With me is Don Mixa from the University of Washington as we talk about high-speed rail, which is one aspect of the stimulus, one aspect of the public works that people talk about that would be provided by the stimulus money. Don, before we go back to our calls, and our number is 877-876-7445, you know, you're talking about pieces of rail line that are going nowhere, and they start nowhere, and they go nowhere, and you say that's not important. What's important now is to get people to work. You know, that's the part that I think is confusing some people.
All right, well, you recall, Phil, when I said that we could get the same labor pool that we had in the 19th century, which is primarily young to middle-aged Chinese nationals who are lower income. And these are people that will come over and work for a very low price. And we could do the same thing. But we want to put Americans to work, and we don't think that the Chinese bring as much as we think the Chinese people are good people, they don't bring a desirable element to this country. And we certainly recognize that from our experience originally with opium addiction and these brothels and the different things that they brought over. What we would rather do is put Americans to work and on a rail line. And I walk by or I drive by every day, and I'm very proud of that. Now, we have on the books right now, on the drawing board, high-speed rail between Mobile and Pritchard, Alabama. High-speed rail between Macon and Moore Lake, Georgia. A high-speed rail line that would go between Portland, Oregon and Beaverton, Oregon. Another high-speed rail that would go between Seattle and Bellevue, Washington.
All right, now I'm not familiar with these areas. Are these disparate areas?
Well, these are areas that people travel. When you say disparate, you're asking me, are we going to put in high-speed rail in places that make sense? Yes, these are places that make sense.
Okay.
Pritchard to Sarland, or Saraland, serves the community well, and it'll put their citizens to work. Morgantown, West Virginia to Craigsville, West Virginia. All of these are areas that are well-traveled areas.
All right. Well, Mobile to Pritchard, though, is a 10-minute drive.
That's correct, yes.
So why would I need a high-speed rail there?
You were asking me, where are we putting rail in? That makes sense. And that's between a city where there's people and another city where there's people.
All right, 877-876-7445. Let's go to Stephen in Concord, New Hampshire. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
This is going to be a joke, right? Because there's no way on God's earth high-speed rail ever makes money anywhere in the world. Our biggest system goes between Washington and Boston, and it's been a money loser.
Well, you guys, it makes money in Japan. It makes a lot of money in Japan. There's a lot of Japanese getting rich on it.
There's no money.
A lot of money.
There's no money in rail.
Yeah, there is. In Japan, I just told you.
And they make
a lot of money on high-speed rail in France, too. So you guys can say it as much as you want, but it's not true. They do make money in high-speed rail.
What is the speed associated with high-speed rail that you're talking about?
Wait a minute. I thought you just told me it doesn't make any money.
What
do you
want
to keep talking about it?
There are three federal levels. The first speed level is 79 miles per hour.
Why would you know so much about something that doesn't make money? See?
They don't make money.
Well, what is the speed?
Yes, they do.
Amtrak make money?
That's not high-speed rail.
Amtrak offers high-speed rail. Do they make money?
No, they do not. No, they do not.
Sir, Amtrak does not offer high-speed rail. No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
So you've got... No, they do not. They have no trains that run up to 200 miles an hour.
high-speed rail.
No, they don't. Are you sure you know what high-speed rail is?
All
right, let me go to another phone call. Here is Phil in Indianapolis. You're on the Phil Henry Show. Phil, go ahead.
Thank you, Phil.
Hey,
well, I'm not
going
to make your point for you, but I don't want to listen to these. Some guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Phil, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, hopefully I clear some of this up before I run out of battery or run out of cell. High-speed rail is, he's correct, it is over 200 miles an hour. Guys, let me get back on point here. The purpose of the California project is to open lanes of commerce.
Up there and down.
Somebody's talking over me, I think.
No, this is Don Mix. I'm just helping you along.
Yeah, please refrain from helping me along.
Well, I want to make sure you get it out straight.
Yeah, I can do just fine without your assistance, and
I'll
turn the phone back over to you in a moment. Anyway, the purpose of the high-speed rail project in California is commerce. Secondarily, yes, it will put people to work, but primarily it's commerce. Much like a superhighway system, they're going to build it in segments and eventually link up the segments so that you can go from Southern California to North Central California.
Can I ask a question? Can I ask a question here? It puts people to work also by building it, correct, gentlemen?
That's the part that Phil missed, yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to clear that up. Is that right, Phil?
People will go back to work, but again, it's to promote commerce. And the other points that I wanted to make are the...
You didn't make the first one very good, see?
Well, will you let the guy finish what he's saying?
All right.
Okay, back to work here.
The whole reason is that I had to
talk to him. If we could cut him off long enough for me to get this out, I think we could clear the entire thing up.
I just cut him off. Go ahead.
Thank you much. Again, the whole purpose of it is to promote commerce in California.
Yeah.
Secondarily, it will put people to work.
What was that?
I had to break off a hold.
Would you put him back on hold, please? Go ahead.
Thank you. It will put people back to work, both in the construction of it, as well as in businesses that will come along after it's built.
Okay,
and back to the construction of it, the other fellow was also talking about...
this is a little dull.
Let me just say it this way.
Yeah, okay. I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and move to another call. Here is Dave in Indianapolis. Dave, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead.
Thank God you got...
Yes, sir, Dave. Hi. What? I can't understand you. Say it again. Dave?
I wonder why they're giving so little credit to the American job pool. I'm unemployed, but I'm college educated. I do know the difference between a spike and a rail.
Yes, sir.
Now, I'm hoping that you're hiring supervisors to begin with, and that's why you're building it out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, we want to build it out in the middle of nowhere because that gives us room. It gives us elbow room. Okay, where do
I understand.
You want to go? All right.
Yeah,
so,
I understand
have
that.
You
no
done
problem.
This, have you ever been the supervisor on any kind of a gang, any kind of a rail gang before?
No, but that doesn't mean I couldn't become one real quick.
Of course. What is your degree in, sir?
I don't have a degree. I just have a college education. I'm not finished. I'm still going, but I'm unemployed. So I'm saying
You're not graduated yet.
No, I might come to California and get a job, though.
California? Where's California?
Yeah.
There's no such place.
What?
Can you find
it? No, I'm just saying you're not giving an American job pool enough credit.
Well, no, I'm saying that we do have good workers, but we want to start with the job pool that we originally had was the Chinese.
Why do you want to start
with
Chinese?
That's not going to happen. You can't do that. That won't happen.
Why not?
It sounds like you're looking for crackheads to me.
No, sir. Why? Because I said Chinese? I'm looking for crackheads?
No, because you said most of them are going to be uneducated, and you have to teach them the difference between a spike and a rail.
That's right.
Most Americans know the difference.
I'm saying to you that the Chinese already know how to build railroads because they were doing it before us.
The Americans built railroads before, too.
Not before the Chinese.
What are we talking about? Are you going to a work base or whatever you want to call it, an employment pool of people whose ancestors over 100 years ago built railroads?
Right.
I thought that was the best way to go. I don't know what this guy's talking about.
No, I'm not. I'm talking about university educated people to do a job.
But you said you're not even out of school yet.
No, I don't, but that doesn't mean I couldn't swing a hammer and hammer a spike.
You know, that's exactly right, but that doesn't mean you need to have a college education to do that.
Right, but I'm saying...
Will you not say Chinaman?
I'm sorry, I could find a...
No, I'm not saying it that way either. I'm just saying you're not giving the American labor force enough credit.
Well, here's what I want to ask you. If you, if I were to take you out there to, out there to Inyo County, we're going to rail, you put down some
rail,
and I put you in front of it, I said, you know what this is, right?
Sure.
You know what a rail, you know what a railroad track looks like, right?
Yes.
Okay. And if I said to you, all right, that's a railroad track, and that's what goes on it, and I point to you a boxcar. So those two things go together in your mind. Okay, great. That's all I'm looking for.
Well, I don't even know the spike and what holds the rail on. The little lip thing.
Okay.
That you drive the spike through.
Are you telling me you're having a hard time finding guys like that?
You got to, when you're doing,
that's
when you're
what
going
I'm
to
saying.
The
there should be plenty of people as smart as me
No, they're not. You've got to tell a guy. Do you know how many people have traveled by rail in this country? How about hardly any? So
yeah,
when you say
that.
This is a railroad track, that's a railroad locomotive.
Right.
And you have to make sure they know how the two go together. That goes on that, and then it stops.
And they have to know how far apart the rails go and what do you do and how far apart the spikes go.
Let me ask you a question. How do you get off of a rail? How do you get off of a train?
You wait for it to stop. You don't jump.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, you can laugh if you want, but look at he's laughing. Yeah, you sound to me like are you a hobo?
No.
With due respect. You're not a hobo because you sound a little bit like...
All right, we don't have to ask the gentleman that.
No, I would want him to work for me if he's a hobo.
No, I'm just
hobo's
saying,
right,
I don't believe
very
you're
good.
Giving the American people enough credit.
Well,
that's
course,
the
I
only
don't.
Thing I'm trying to say.
I think you
say.
Need to quit smoking. If you come to work for me, you got to put down...
You're right about that.
I don't know what you're doing, smoking cigars and inhaling them, but...
All right, thanks very much, Dave, for your call. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show talking to Don Mixa here on the infrastructure of this country and the stimulus money going to it, high-speed rail. And this idea that I thought you were kidding at first when you said you're going to bring Chinese people over here. That, you know, when that happened over 100 years ago, China was a monarchy. It wasn't the communist state that it is today.
No, I understand, but you still have people who want to make some money. China is one thing. I'll tell you what China still is. If it was one thing in the 19th century that it still is today, nobody can make any money. Not any real money. Not any real money. I mean, you can go over there. They're going to pay you $10 a day, and the average Chinese guy is going to go, oh, yeah, you know, however they talk. And...
Uh-huh.
What?
Let's take a break. Oh, yeah, $10 a day. We'll be back here. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're talking about the President's State of the Union. I don't know. State of the Union address with Don Mixa from the University of Washington and the high-speed rail. Do we really even need to know where it's going as long as it's putting people to work? 877-876-7445, the Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Coming up next hour, Ron Tarner will be talking with us about another aspect of tonight's State of the Union. That was Michelle Bachmann's speech, sort of the response to the response to the State of the Union. And Don Mixa from the University of Washington with us for our last segment. Don, these high-speed rail projects, okay, all around the country, you gave me a list, and all of these high-speed rail projects go in cities where they don't, it doesn't seem like they need them.
Well, I don't know why you say that.
Well, if you've got a high-speed rail that goes from, now let me find this one that you'd send me. It was a high-speed rail that goes from, I believe, some part of Pritchard, Alabama to Saraland, Alabama, that takes it's a 10-minute drive.
Yeah, but that serves the community and it puts citizens to work, okay?
But it's a 10-minute drive. Why do you need a high-speed rail?
I have to tell you, and you're just going to get the same answer from me. You're going to get the same answer from President Obama. It is a part of the city, a part of that area where it'll put people to work. and it is a high-speed rail. And
all right, if it takes me 10 minutes to drive it, how long would it take me on a train?
If it takes you 10 minutes to drive it, it'll probably take probably about 3 minutes. I mean, that's how fast it is. If you take 10 minutes to drive it, that means you're going 60 miles an hour. You're going a mile a minute. You're going a mile a minute. All right, so let's call it 10 miles. If it takes you 3 minutes to go 10 miles, then you are going, let's put 3 into 3. You're going 3 miles a second. And
3 miles a second?
Yeah, 3 miles a minute, something like that. That's fast. I mean, that is fast as hell. And I don't think there's anybody out there in your listening audience, Phil, that would not welcome and enjoy an experience like that. I mean, you are approaching speeds that no human being has ever, no regular human being, no citizen. I mean, I'm not talking about an astronaut or some crazy guy that does drag racing or something. You just be a regular person. And you get to sit in a train that approaches a speed that could, if you did not have a compressurized cabin, could strangle you. And I say that with, I'm not trying to scare anybody, but that's what is going on. Look at Seattle, Washington to Bellevue, 10 minutes. That's a drive, but it could go in 2.5 minutes. Portland to Beaverton is a 5-minute drive. It will go from Portland to Beaverton in exactly 45 seconds. That's a 5-minute drive.
And 5-minute drive meaning 5 miles?
5 miles. So it'll go there in 45 seconds at 5 miles. So you're going 5 goes into 45, 10 seconds in one mile of 10 seconds. If you were not in a fully pressurized cabin on that train, you would strangle. And I think people are going to appreciate that. I'll give you an example. If you stuck your head out of the window of a high-speed rail, it could pull the skin from your face. That's how fast it goes. But the windows are not going to open, so But you get my meaning, right?
And no, I understand. It's going really, really fast.
It's going really, really fast. And I think this is what a lot of people are afraid of. There's never been a time in American history when we haven't been afraid of technology. There's never been a time in American history where we haven't been afraid of some new technology. We were frightened to death of the telephone. We're frightened to death of computers. We're scared out of our minds by these big widescreen TVs. We are petrified with fear, almost to the point of losing control of our bladder every time we see one of those self-scan machines in the supermarket. And now, of course,
how much would this project cost? Where does the money come from?
Well, the money comes from the stimulus.
All right, how much would it cost?
Well, to put in the high-speed rail in California, it's going to be about a $40 billion project.
$40 billion.
That is correct. But let's, because I just heard the way you said that. You think that's a lot?
Yeah, I think it's a lot. $40 billion, my God, for the whole project?
It's $40 billion, Phil. You have to understand, it's $40 billion for just that one stretch of rail. And then it's another $40 billion. So I hope I'm answering your question.
Oh, well, it's too much money. It's just too much money, and I don't think the American people are going to go for it, But I appreciate Don.
Well, what do you mean? Wait, hold on. They got no choice, okay? So that's out of their hands. But I appreciate you having me on your program. I wish that people would do more reading up on it. And I wish that they would lose their fear of high-speed rail and all of this gobbledygook about how it doesn't make money, because it makes a ton of money, especially the Japanese. They've learned how to do it right. That's why I want to bring Chinese in to build it, because I think the Asians get it. The Asians get it. The Chinese, the Japanese know how to make money, and the Chinese know how to build them. And I'd like to bring Asians in to run the whole network. And that way we get off to a very lucrative start, because if I've got to start with Americans like this gentleman, and he's a very nice man, but the gentleman that I was talking to here from Indianapolis, who sounded as if he had an advanced case of some sort of a fungus or a valley fever in his lung, I can't do it. I can't have a guy like that taking tickets. I can't, the days and ages of some conductor with a key, with that kind of watch fob going, next stop, Lodi, I can't do it.
I understand.
So I can't have a guy like that with green teeth going, how are you? And how many people and how many bags? That's not going to happen. It's not on my watch now.
All right. Well, good luck in finding the right kind of people to staff your train.
What do you? This is a joke, Phil, because I know you have a talk show, but let me just say it. How about you, Phil?
Yeah.
That funny.
right, man. Thank you very much, Don.
Yeah, man.
I know he got mad. I didn't mean to make him mad, but I'm not interested in... no, I don't want to take tickets at your high-speed rail train station. All right, our number here on the Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445. More to come. We have Ron Tarner next hour, and Dr. Ron Tarner will be talking with us about Michelle Bachmann's use of the Iwo Jima, the very iconic Iwo Jima imagery, in her State of the Union. You know, her little... I guess they called it a Tea Party response. Dr. Tarner has taken grave exception to that, as have other Americans, and we'll talk with him when we come up next hour here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Dr. Ron Tarner there in Cloverdale, Colorado, plus the dirtiest hotels in the United States. We've got the top 10. Bud and Robert in our news hour will be along to talk with us about that, and some of these places are so funky, so foul, and you've probably stayed in them. All of that and more ahead here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Again, our number 877-876-7445.
Phil Hendry.
Not on my watch.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Let's also remember that after parents, the biggest impact on child success...
If I hadn't never wore this tie, I wouldn't have known his...
We are held to a high standard of public service.
And the security procedures are now going too far. I mean, there is a line somewhere, and
thank you
believe that.
Those fat, lazy veterans...
You blew it!
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Because truth is our bitch. We go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't and they won't, so they don't. 877-876-7445. 877-876-7445, the number here. And coming up this hour, a Utah trooper, well, actually coming up later on tonight in our news hour, a Utah trooper is in hot water for hitting a 53-year-old woman in the head. It was during a traffic stop there in Utah, and something went wrong. I don't know what. Man, I don't know. I don't want to know. I guess I'm going to have to find out, though. Hit her in the head after this traffic stop, and so there's been hell to pay on that one. Man, we'll find out about it. And the nastiest hotels in the country. Joining us this hour is Dr. Ron Tarner, 877-876-PHIL, and our website is philhendryshow.com. If you want to have email contact with me, that's where you email us, at Phil Hendry Show. You go to our website, and you go to Backstage, and you hit that, and you'll find the email form. And we get to our email, and we email you back, and we talk to you, and some people I go back and forth with, and some people I'm like psycho analyzing, and it's really creepy and really weird, but hey, you know, we said we would do it, so we do. Anyway, 877-876-PHIL. Dr. Ron Tarner is a astronomer as well as a cosmologist at the Mountain Meadow Observatory in Cloverdale, Colorado. We have Ron on the line with us tonight, and we're going to talk about something that a lot of people didn't see, Dr. Tarner, and that was Michelle Bachmann's Tea Party response to President Obama. How are you doing this evening?
Well, I'm very good, Phil. And, I have my son Jesse with me this week, so we're having a great time.
Can you tell the audience? I did see it, Ron. I know you did too. Tell the audience what Michelle Bachmann was doing, and you don't have to give me any commentary. Just tell us. Just describe what you what happened after the president's speech. Because again, I don't think a lot of people saw it.
Absolutely, Phil. Congresswoman Bachmann came on television following Representative Ryan's response. So the Republicans had two responses, and I guess the television networks carried Congressman Ryan's response.
And that was a more mainstream Republican response?
I would say it was the more mainstream one, although with the popularity of the Tea Party, you don't really know what is a mainstream Republican response anymore. But then came Congresswoman Bachmann. And Congresswoman Bachmann gave her response to President Obama's State of the Union speech. She said that the last several years were a disaster in terms of federal spending. She said that the health care plan was an absolute disaster. She said that the Tea Party is a very positive and constructive response to the distress that America finds itself in. And she said a lot of different things. And then she used as, and she said that we were facing a big fight. We were facing a very challenging future in making sure that we bring spending under control and making sure, Phil, that President Obama's health care plan doesn't get passed. And then, as a way of illustrating what the battle represents, she brought out a photograph, which I consider to be iconic, as do other Americans, the photograph of the Marines raising the flag on Iwo Jima.
You were offended by that.
I was absolutely offended by that. Where she would use the image of those Marines raising that flag on Iwo Jima as a symbol of the Tea Party's fight to overturn Barack Obama's legislation, I found it to be absolutely offensive. And I think every veteran out there would, if they had seen this, they would have. And if they'd seen it, and it was really an embarrassing display, Phil, because she wasn't looking at the camera for whatever reason. They had set the teleprompter up wrong. She was not only looking at the camera the wrong way, she had on too much eyeliner. It was, I think, an embarrassing presentation, but I was very put off by this using of that image.
Now, you told me that you are involved in work for animal rights. Is that correct?
That is correct, and we do use that image.
All right, so you, yes, you do use the image of the Marines raising, and I agree with you. That is an iconic, and I was just talking to Jason, you know, my producer during the break, and said, well, what are the iconic images in American history? Well, I suppose as kids we saw, you know, Washington crossing the Delaware, you know.
Well, and, you know, and Mount Rushmore, and then, many things. And I don't think there's anyone that doesn't know the photograph of the Marines on Iwo Jima raising the flag.
All right. She used that for the Tea Party. You use it for animal rights.
Completely different and just a completely different political point of view. And let's slow down here, because I want to be very clear. And if I got this wrong, I want you to tell me, Phil. I didn't think you were going to bring that up. If that is true, then we could talk about it.
Well, nobody told me not to bring it up. I know that you're involved in a great many animal rights causes there in Colorado. And haven't you guys used the Marines raising the flag on Iwo Jima as a symbol?
We have used it in our bailers. Here is why it is different from what Michelle Bachmann did tonight in that State of the Union address. It's different because we are talking about the rights of a creature on this earth. We're talking about rights. And so it's different than her talking about not liking a president. I was going to say a black president. I guess that I shouldn't say that.
No, I don't want you to attribute that. We don't have to get, if the woman is using a symbol.
All right, well, I won't use it. You don't, I understand, Phil.
But I mean, if the woman's using a symbol, or the Tea Party's using a symbol that you find inappropriate, we don't have to say it's against a black president.
Well,
it's against the fact that he's got a big spending program they don't like.
All right, it's against what they consider to be socialism. Completely different.
And why is your animal rights, the work you do with animal rights, why is it all right to use that Iwo Jima flag picture and not Michelle Bachmann's Tea Party?
Is it different? I'll tell you why. The difference, Phil, is that we do work for the rights of animals. She is doing work to tear down a president. And let me say something else. What she's doing is she's using this very beloved image of the United States Marines on Iwo Jima raising that flag. She's using that to promote the a political fiscal view, whereas we use it to promote the rights, to promote human rights. It's not human rights, but we promote animal rights. But when we in our advertising, we say human rights. Now, this happened tonight, and it happened, Phil, out of view of a great many people. I'm sorry that they missed it, that President Obama gave his State of the Union address, and then Michelle Bachmann stole from every single American, every American out there stole this image.
Dr. Ron Tarner is with us. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-7445. And he's talking about Michelle Bachmann giving her her response to the State of the Union. There were two by the Republicans. One was from, I suppose, mainstream Republicans from Congressman Ryan. And then the other was from Congresswoman Bachmann. And in hers, she did have behind her, and she turned and sort of presented it, a photograph of the Iwo Jima Marines. Now, at the time that she turned and said, "We have a big fight ahead. We have a against all odds," she turned and she said, "Well, this is against all odds," and that's when we saw that.
That's when she brought out the Iwo Jima flag. And and let me just say, it was another example of Michelle Bachmann getting history wrong because she said that. Against all odds. Well, the Marines had a very tough fight on Iwo Jima, but it was not against all odds. By that point, the American military had rolled the Japanese back very smartly, thank you very much. But I'll tell you, when I saw her, in the name of rolling back the Obama agenda, show the Marine Corps flag, I called up a friend of mine, Dick Wilson, who's a big Tea Party guy. And I said, "You have got to be kidding me." And that's when he brought up the fact that we use the Marine flag on our animal rights brochures.
What did you say?
I said to him, "That's not what I'm talking about right now." I said, "I'm talking about your woman here, Bachmann." And I said that I'm offended on behalf of all Americans, and especially veterans, on behalf of all veterans, for what Bachmann did. And he said to me, "What about veterans that would be upset with you using it for animal rights?" And I kept saying to him, you really want to keep turning this against me. It's got nothing to do with me."
Well, isn't that a good question if you're using it for animal rights?
No, it's not. It's not a good question, no. I've already explained to you that the Tea Party sponsored the Bachmann insult to veterans. The Tea Party's not sponsoring me. And if it's an insult to veterans, at least the Tea Party's not doing it.
Well, what if we got some calls from veterans and find out what they think, you know?
Well, if I could jump in, Phil.
Go ahead.
I don't think that's a good idea. Let me tell you why. I don't think that's a good idea. I don't want to talk to them. I don't think Michelle Bachmann would want to talk to them. And since she's not here, I think it's only fair. I think it's fair for me to say that I'm speaking on behalf of veterans. I don't think she is, but I don't want to talk to any veterans. So I'd appreciate if you kept the veterans off the air. I think I am speaking for them, and that's enough for this conversation.
Well, I don't know that that's... All right, I don't know that you can say that. We're talking here with...
Phil, please.
All right, hold on. We're talking here with Dr. Ron Tarner. Our number, 877-876-7445, on Michelle Bachmann's response to the State of the Union address tonight, which used the Marine Corps raising the flag on Iwo Jima as a symbol of the against-the-odds fight she and the Tea Party have in rolling back Obamacare and these other examples of too much spending. Dr. Ron Tarner thinks that it's an insult to veterans to use it in that way, although his animal rights campaigns have used it quite a bit. And
if I could speak on my behalf.
Go ahead.
We have used it, but I've used it in favor of the rights of animals, not against human beings living.
And well, that's not what...
Well, if you're rolling back Obamacare... All right, I don't want to get into it.
All right, 877-876-7445 is the number. Your phone calls for our guest, Dr. Ron Tarner, coming up next. And next hour, we have our news hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Yeah, I really don't... I don't even want to talk about it.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Show back here on number 877-876-7445 as we talk here to Dr. Ron Tarner. Dr. Tarner is a scientist. He's an astronomer. But we're not talking with him tonight about his field of study or his professional field. We're talking tonight about the use of a very iconic American image, which is the Marines raising the American flag on Mount Suribachi in World War II, which was used tonight by Michelle Bachmann in her speech against Barack Obama.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, and you were offended by that. Now, I can understand that, but what I'm trying to figure out here is the images that you use in your animal rights campaigns, which are equally iconic.
Well, you say equally iconic.
Let's talk about this picture of people falling from the World Trade Center. And that is, as long as I live, that will always be with me, the people that were jumping.
That is exactly right, Phil. And it is a terrible memory that we'll all have. We use that image, if I could, and we blend that image into lobsters that are dropped into a pot of boiling water, which is equally horrific and equally against human rights, animal rights, and so forth.
And you also use the very iconic photograph of Dr. King's murder in Memphis.
We do. And I have to tell you, Phil, I believe we're very respectful with everything we do.
All right, but I mean, I know that you've had a problem with KFC, animal rights, PETA, all these people. But the people that are pointing from the balcony of Dr. King's motel are pointing at a KFC, right?
That is exactly right.
And you don't worry that there's going to be some sort of racial overtone?
You know, I think you should apologize to me for you to say something like that.
You don't think that a very iconic picture of black people of Jesse Jackson and other people that were with Reverend King that day pointing, and what they were pointing to is where the shots came from. And
Mr. Henry, I'm aware of what they're pointing at.
But in the picture, you've got them pointing to a KFC. And looking here at the caption, even Dr. King knew.
That is correct, Phil. And
why would you use his name? Why would you use the Marines? Well, you know, you got a problem with Michelle Bachmann.
What are you talking about, use the Marines? I think if Dr. King were alive, I don't think he'd want animals to be abused. I think he was a humanist in every way. And I think we are being far more respectful to Dr. King that Michelle Bachmann ever was or ever will be in her whole life when it comes to the United States Marines and her misuse of that flag and the picture. Now, I'm very happy to speak on behalf of the Marine Corps. And
are you a veteran yourself?
That is completely irrelevant.
And are you a veteran, sir? I'm just asking. Are you a veteran?
That's completely irrelevant.
So that's a no, right?
No, it's not a no. It's irrelevant.
Well, I'm going to take it as a no.
No. You will not take it as a no.
Then it's a yes.
I'm saying to you that it is completely irrelevant.
You're going to speak for veterans, and you're going to say that the use of that flag, that iconic Suribachi flag raising by Michelle Bachmann, is offensive to veterans.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
But not when you use it in your animal rights campaign.
I think I've made myself very clear. I think you owe me an apology, saying that what I was basically saying was, hey, here's some black people on a Memphis balcony, and let's go get ourselves a bucket of chicken.
And no, I didn't say that. I said, could it be taken that way?
Well, you introduced the theme.
You introduced the theme, sir, I think, by using that picture and using Dr. King's name. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Dan in Brawley, California. Dan, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Yes, I'm a veteran. I spent 20 years in the Navy from 1963 to 1983, and I don't find it offensive at all that Ms. Bachmann...
Were you a Marine?
Marine Corps Memorial.
Were you a Marine?
Her speech.
But you weren't a Marine, right?
Pardon me?
You were not a Marine, a member of the Marine Corps?
Well, what difference does it make? You said
Marine.
Veteran.
I wasn't a Marine. I was in the Navy. The Marine Corps is part of the Navy. If you were a veteran, you would know that.
I
currently work with Marine Corps.
Well, I understand that, sir, but you know
and
as
I'm
well
not
as I do that the Marine
none
Corps...
None of the Marines I work with are.
The Marine Corps, they always laugh at you guys and go to Popeye.
It's people
Wait
like
a minute.
You. people like you who have never served that think you can speak for veterans. Well, you
can't. I'm speaking on behalf of veterans.
You have never served. You have never served, and you have no right to speak for veterans.
If you thought about
veterans
it,
speak
you
for
would
veterans.
Feel ashamed of yourself. You
veterans
feel ashamed
speak
that you support that.
Veterans, sir. Veterans
sir,
speak
can I ask
for
you something?
Veterans.
What do you do when a Marine does the Popeye laugh when you walk by? You know they do
Marines
that.
Don't do that.
What's that got to do with anything?
Oh, he knows. The Marines are always making fun
Marines
of guys.
Marines I know don't do that. The Marines I work with don't do that.
Not to your face, no. And here you are defending.
Let's forget about that, okay? This inter-service whatever's going on. Let's listen to what the man's saying.
Inter-service rivalry.
You know as well as I do, they
been,
do the pie. They go,
been a dead issue for years. The inter-service rivalry has been a dead issue for years. You need
so,
to,
in other words, the,
you've never served, have you?
Stand for
you have never served, have you, sir? Sir.
Marine stand for my ass
right sir.
Let's answer the gentleman's question.
You have never served, have you?
That is irrelevant.
Well, you know what? You've got to answer that question.
You're talking about veterans. You say you're speaking for veterans. It's very relevant.
I think that it's safe to say the use of that flag, the use of that flag by Michelle Bachmann is an offense to every Marine.
Have you spent any time in the service?
I won't dignify that with an answer.
Have you spent any time in the service?
So have you, sir.
I won't dignify it with an answer. I won't dignify it.
That's not an answer. I don't know why you don't want to. I don't know why you don't want to answer that question.
I will just simply say this. I. Yeah, that bothers you, doesn't it? And that's what Marines do to you guys behind your back.
That's none of your beeswax. What we're asking here is if you are using this flag, the Suribachi raising. This in your animal rights campaign, why can't Michelle Bachmann use it in hers?
Because I'm helping save animals. I'm not standing there trying to get elected president.
Anyway, Dan, thanks for your call. 877-876-7445, 877-876-7445. World famous Phil Henry Show here with Dr. Ron Tarter.
Phil Henry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
877-876-PHIL. You know, when you said that, Ron, there's few things in this world that will bring me close to tears. A public image. When that child was shot in Iran, that girl at NADA, that tore the guts out of me. And for you guys to even consider using that.
Phil, I told you we did not. Out of respect, obviously. I told you we did not.
The fact that you would even consider using that for your animal rights campaign. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445.
Well, if I could interrupt you, you've had an awful lot of judgment here tonight. And I think your judgment is concerning what I do with images, such as the Kennedy assassination.
You've got a picture of President Kennedy, and everybody remembers this picture, where he leans forward and he's holding his throat.
That is correct.
And underneath it's something along the lines of, where is this? Give it to me, bud. This is what happens. Here it is. This is what happens when you eat mercury-laced tuna. That was President Kennedy having been shot.
That's correct. Yes, sir.
And you're saying this is what happens when you eat mercury-laced tuna. In other words, let's take the another iconic image of an American president being murdered before our very eyes and turn that into what happens to people when they eat tuna.
Am I using the death of American Marines to promote my agenda to be president of the United States?
Okay. Don, what I'm saying...
Am I using my agenda to use American Marines raising the flag to be president of the United States, yes or no?
I'm not going to be asked a yes or no question.
Am I...
No, you're not. And I don't think Michelle Bachmann was either.
Oh, give me a break. She stood there with too much eyeliner, and I have to be honest with you. I'm being personal, and I shouldn't, but I'm going to do it. Whoever put the makeup on that woman tonight I don't know what they were going for, but she looked like something out of 28 weeks later.
Well, that's very flattering.
I didn't put on her eyeliner, and she was staring off into space. And then she, then those great Marines raising that flag, and this is the symbol of the Tea Party. I thought I was going to vomit excrement. And I'm sorry to put it that way, but I thought that everything was going to come out of my mouth, including what goes the other way. That's how sick I was.
But you don't call it sick when you take a picture of Martin Luther King's death and those people pointing, and they're pointing at a KFC.
Because of the free-range chicken?
Because of the free-range chicken, Martin Luther King. 877-876-PHIL. It's amazing that you don't see my point.
It's amazing that you don't see how over the top you are compared to what Obama, what Michelle Bachmann did with her Elvira Mistress of the Night makeup.
877-876-7445. Let me go to a phone call. Melanie on KHNU in Hawaii. Go ahead, Melanie. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to say just how listening to the program, I am incredibly, I just think it's incredibly inappropriate for this gentleman to speak for veterans, to speak for people, to speak for Michelle Bachmann, when he doesn't speak to them, he won't let them have their say. So I just wanted to say that it is inappropriate to speak for someone else and not let someone speak for themselves, because I'm a Hawaiian person. I am 50% Hawaiian. I would not say all Hawaiians feel this way just because I am Hawaiian. I have my own personal view, my own thoughts, and that's what all people have. And for this gentleman to say, well, this, I think all veterans, he does not know all veterans. He can say, this is how I feel, this is what I think, but
I don't speak for all veterans.
For people,
but I'm simply saying that I'm saying though, in this case, and only in this case, I don't think the veterans are educated enough to know what they're talking about. So I speak for them.
What do you mean not educated enough?
So
don't you think every
for you to say uneducated?
Well,
that is so
just
rude
in this
of
one
you,
instance.
And so crass and so unintelligent for you to make a statement like that to say
Mr. Henry lied to me. Mr. Henry lied to me and put a veteran on the air when he said he wouldn't.
I didn't say that I wouldn't put veterans on the air.
He wouldn't. He did not say. I was listening the entire time. He did not say he wouldn't. That is something
that you want.
But this is his show. Do you understand that?
Ma'am.
This is his show, not your show.
I'll give you an example. You know as well as I do that all Hawaiians are resentful of the United States making it a state, correct?
I am not resentful. I am not. You cannot speak for me.
Oh, come on. Why do you lie?
Where do you get off speaking on behalf of people?
I don't understand how you can say this. So the fact, I just want to say...
I'm saying, based on what I know, Hawaiians want to have the king back.
No, you don't know. You don't know because you are not born and raised from the island. So you do not know. Okay, I am. I am born. My generations are from this island. So you do not know. Okay?
Well, you don't know where I'm from.
Where are you from, Don?
I'm not going to dignify that.
So you won't tell me if you're a veteran. You won't tell me where you're from. Are you from Hawaii?
I'm not going to say where I'm from.
How can you speak for Hawaiians?
From what I know of Hawaiians, and I know a lot, they want the king back, the pineapple groves, they want that life back. That's what I've heard.
That is incredibly untrue.
Oh, my God.
You know, that is so incredibly untrue. Okay? I am a born and raised Hawaiian. So to push all that aside and to not make things personal, which is what you are doing... You are making
exactly.
it personal, and you're not making it about the facts. So the fact is that you cannot speak for people. The fact is that you have your thoughts. That's your fact. That's your idea. Okay, that is your view. My view is that Michelle Bachmann speaks for people like me who cannot speak out, who do not have the opportunity to go on air and say how they feel. She is speaking for people, for the silent people like us, who cannot stand up and say, this is how I feel. So just to let you know,
that's true.
just to let you know, it is how I feel. I feel that way, and I feel that Michelle Bachman, she has her right to speak.
I would have believed you had you not told me you were Hawaiian.
What did you say?
I would have believed her had she not told me she was Hawaiian. And that changed everything.
What does that mean?
When she told me she was Hawaiian, then I began to realize that her agenda is to bring the monarchy back to Hawaii.
You know what? That has nothing to do with it. You don't have any. We're talking about the picture that you feel that Michelle Bachman felt that all veterans would think that. That they were offended. That's what you felt, and that is what we were discussing on the show.
I believe that they are. Yes, I believe they are.
And you don't have any idea that you're not a veteran.
You
had a veteran call and say,
"Let me ask this lady a question. Have you ever seen the Harlem Globetrotters? You probably haven't. And the reason why you haven't is because they're not allowed in Hawaii. Why? Because they're afraid that the Globetrotters, believe it or not, will stir up some kind of nativist reaction among Hawaiians.
About what?
About bringing back King, I don't know what his name was.
You are making intelligent conversation about something incredibly ridiculous. Do you understand that, sir?
No,
incredibly ridiculous.
Absolutely asinine. And your views on Hawaii, and I know why you're thinking this way, because President Obama's from there, right?
You don't know that.
You know what? That's exactly, now I'm putting two and two together. You a birther?
That's none of your business.
Uh-huh. All right, Melanie, thank you very, very much, and
thank you for calling us. Mahalo.
Mahalo to you. I don't know what that means.
Well, you know, Mr. Henry, there's a good example there. You went mahalo. What, are you all of a sudden a beachcomber or something?
No, I was trying to be polite.
Do you know what that means?
Goodbye?
Well, duh. Let me be the one that speaks to people of color and veterans, because I have, as a longtime member of the Democratic Party, I feel I understand them better. And for you to jump in... And
what is this stuff about the Harlem Globetrotters, man? About how did they ever play Hawaii? 877-876-PHIL. Let's move on to Davey in Vallejo, California. Davey, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I am. I'm a son of a 28-year Navy veteran, and he never spoke like that with the Marines. I was in NJRTC through high school for 2 years.
Uh-huh.
Went on a cruise. Marines. And then how dare he borrow an iconic military picture.
Yeah.
He has never been in the service.
Michelle Bachman's never been in the service, and she had that thing up tonight talking about the Tea Party. And yet I use it for animal rights and for my lectures that I'll be doing next summer. And
for your lectures that you'll be doing next summer. For profit?
It's very unfair, Mr.
For-profit lectures?
It's very unfair to let Michelle Bachman use it, and I can't.
Why don't you, go ahead, sir.
I'm going to back off because I live in Hawaii, too.
Okay, you know what I'm talking about. Did you see the Harlem Globetrotters?
I know what I'm talking about. I've been to that memorial. Them boys and girls, there's girls nowadays, putting their lives on the line.
It's not in Hawaii. Where the Marines raised the flag is Mount Suribachi on Iwo Jima, not Hawaii.
How dare you claim to be of an icon when you never served in the military? I can tell the way you...
I'm an icon? I can tell by the way you look through your face, you're probably crazier than a crap house rat, right?
And
That flag was raised on Iwo Jima, not Hawaii.
I'm trying to talk. You're not saying anything. You're intelligent, not come up with your own idea. Tell me that. Or you can't answer that either.
Yes, I did come up with my own idea, and this is it. The flag was raised on Iwo Jima, not Hawaii.
You copied the blessings of our men and women that are fighting for this country. Did you not?
Right.
And so did she.
Yeah,
why can't
Michelle
either
Bachman
one of you
too.
Come up with your idea?
Michelle Bachman did too. How come you're not yelling at her?
The doctor.
Oh, and she's the idiot?
Tell everybody,
God, it's so unfair.
You're the doctor. How come you can't...
No.
With something.
How come you don't know where the flag was raised? How come you know Iwo Jima's not in Hawaii?
excuse
Iwo
me,
Jima
buddy,
is Iwo Jima.
About the Hawaii, it has nothing to do with the discussion.
Yeah, it does. Because you think that the flag was raised by the Marines in Hawaii. You Puerto Rican idiot.
Oh, will you come on? That's a very sacred icon, that flag raised on Mount Suribachi. You're using it for your animal rights campaign, and now I find out for a series of lectures that you're going to be giving. Where are you giving the lectures?
If I answer that, then this man, Davey, is going to go ape on me.
Where are you giving the lectures?
In Hawaii.
Oh, that's great.
I'm giving a series of lectures on how to treat it. What?
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about me. I'm talking about you. I'm talking about Mount Suribachi and chicken beak, which winds up in most of your hamburger meat. All right? That's number one. Number two, you went to Hawaii. You saw the Harlem Globetrotters. I talked to a woman from Hawaii moments ago who said she doesn't want the royalty back. Well, you know what? You could have knocked me over with a feather. Okay? Okay, Dave? All right.
No. Just
too lot. See you later. 877-876-PHIL.
You having fun?
You know, you sound like a jackass. No wonder the guy was laughing.
Are you having fun?
Yeah, I'm having fun. You're going to use the Mount Suribachi picture. You're going to do this and that. I think if you are going to single out Michelle Bachmann for misusing an American iconic photograph, then you have to look at what you're doing. Using it for a series of lectures. You got Kennedy getting shot, and it looks like he's eating bad tuna. You got people falling out of the World Trade Center, and you use that for lobsters that are dropped into boiling water. I mean, every kind of picture that brings out such emotion in people, you use for your animal rights campaign, but Michelle Bachmann uses the Suribachi photo, and she's bad. Here's James in Jackson, Mississippi. Go ahead, James. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, sir. I'm curious, you pretty much hit the nail on the head. He's using the same picture that Michelle did, and he's badgering her, but he's not pointing a finger at himself. He's pointing one finger at her. Well, he's got to look. He's got four more pointing at himself. I mean, let's compare.
Well, I lost a finger in a skill saw accident.
Yeah, what were you saying?
I said I lost one of my fingers in a skill saw accident. So I'm actually pointing. I'm only pointing three fingers back at myself.
Okay, but you get the man's point, right?
All right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you're gonna sit here and say that somebody jumping out of the World Trade Center who had two choices: burn to death or jump to your death. You know, personally, I'd much rather jump. I'm a fireman, and one of the main things that scares me is fire. But I do it because I want to learn more about it. And I can tell you this much. I can tell you this much. I'd much rather jump to my death. And in hopes I die of a heart attack and sit there and burn to death. That's a slow, agonizing death. Okay.
Well, I wouldn't sit there either. I would be running.
A lobster being dropped in a pot. You know, the last time I checked, which I don't know how far the religion y'all go, we're not getting into that. But you know, the good Lord put animals on this earth for us to eat, and I believe a lobster is one of them. I mean, you got to compare that to a shrimp. I mean, yeah, is that going to be your next slogan? Don't eat shrimp, and then show, you know, the world.
If you said that the good Lord put the animals on the planet to eat, you have a dog. You obviously don't eat the dog. And there are other animals that we don't eat.
We've actually, unlike you, we've moved forward in history and started learning more. You're like, don't eat your dog. I'm not. I'm eating a lobster. That's a shellfish.
I'm going backward in time because I want to make sure that the Hawaiian people don't reestablish are you laughing at me?
Yes, I am. Go ahead.
Why are you laughing at me?
Because at one point you're talking about, you know, the American people. Okay, now you're talking about the Hawaiians like they're not even American. I mean, if you're talking about American people, let's just say the American people. I mean, okay, you're going to go to Hawaii. I guarantee you it's probably going to be there in the summertime. There's going to be a lot of people out there on the beach having a good time, you know, sun tanning and everything. Congratulations.
Okay.
I'm proud of you. Go on a vacation.
Okay,
because it's an animal rights movement. Be sure to have your picture of the flag being raised on Iwo Jima, okay?
Okay, wait a second. How come I can't do that? But Michelle Bachmann, in order to get health care rolled back, uses a picture of Marines dying on Mount Suribachi, and that's okay with you.
Because she is representing something about the government.
Oh, she's not representing anything other than her own desire to be president of the United States. But I'm the guy that gets slapped around and beat like some jail bitch.
because you're showing pictures, Hello? As he says, of JFK getting shot.
Yeah.
And you're comparing that to eating whatever. I didn't even hear that last
No, time. I said this man just ate, this guy just ate chicken of the sea.
All right, listen, hey, yeah, James, it's insane. This man just ate chicken of the sea.
That's right.
That's what you're using that JFK picture for.
Yes.
Well, you know something, man? JFK was a guy. He was a human. He had family. He had relatives. Maybe they don't want you using his picture for chicken of the sea. And maybe they don't want Martin Luther King pointing to KFC, man. Boy.
You call that racist.
Yeah, I think that if there's a bunch of black folks pointing to a KFC, some people might get the idea. James, thank you for your call. The world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-7445. What an idiot you are, man.
No, I know I am, but what are you? I know I am, but what are you?
Phil Henry Show next hour. We have our news hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. Let's take one more phone call here for Dr. Ron Turner. We have Richard in Charlestown, Indiana. And Richard, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, please.
Yes, how are you doing today, Phil?
I'm good.
Okay, yeah, I'd just like to make a comment concerning the doctor there. I don't know where he got his PhD from, whether he's really a doctor or not, but
I
anyway.
I got my PhD from California Institute of Technology, Caltech.
Okay, well, you don't sound
what,
very
what state are you in? What state are you in?
I'm in Indiana. But to get
Illinois.
To the point, Indiana.
I bet he's
but
in
anyway,
Illinois.
Where's anyway,
never mind. Go ahead.
To get to the point here is Michelle Bachmann's got just as much right to use the picture of the Marines using the, raising the flag at Iwo Jima as you do yourself.
But
I mean, the reason she is using that is to show that they fought for our constitutional rights. And she has just as much right, the Tea Party has just as much right to protect, we're protecting ourselves against Obama's administration.
He has no right to use the U.S. Marines to attack Obama's health care plan. That is, somebody should have arrested her.
Arrested her? I mean, we have freedom of speech. We have freedom of speech, okay?
Somebody needs to attack Obama's health care because with his death panels and everything else,
you think those Marines that died on, the Marines that died on Iwo Jima, they were all Republicans? I don't think so.
So no, I don't think that's true.
Why can't I use that picture to promote, dogs being allowed to do what they want to do? Why can't I do that?
Well, I agree with you. I protect the animals and all that, but she has the right to use that just as much as you do. You know, again,
I disagree with it because it's a symbol of
our constitutional rights that we're looking at a socialist regime right there in Obama administration.
You know, that's not right to use those parades. And I think I have more of a right because she's just trying to be president. I want dogs to be able to do what they want to do.
What do you mean dogs do what they want to do? What does that
she's
mean?
She's just using that to represent the Tea Party.
What do you think?
Tea Party for the Constitution. If the Obama administration has anything to do with it, there won't be a Constitution.
What about the animal rights and dogs and cats being allowed to do what they feel like doing? But we don't let them do it.
Why do you have the right to show these pictures, but somebody else does?
Well, because I'm supporting the rights of human rights of animals, which are not human.
Phil Henry.
But they have rights.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Remember the smashing of the glass.
Today, there are hundreds of thousands of students.
The security procedures are now going too far.
Middle showroom floor.
says, take your tie off or you
and
fire.
And he pulled his pants down?
Yeah, something like that.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go through the looking glass and beyond, going places other talk shows wish they could, but they cannot. They cannot. Not that they won't, they can't. Yeah! This hour is what we call our news hour. Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman along the way, and our Phil Hendry Show website, philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. You can watch live streaming video of the show. You can also access thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of our archives. And when I say thousands of hours, that's exactly what I'm talking about, thousands of hours. And when you check out backstage pass, what it is per month, it's like $6.95. Brother, there ain't a better deal in entertainment. Nowhere. And for a radio station website, for a radio show website, we actually offer you something. Because I'm telling you, I'm very familiar with radio show websites. They don't have anything. I mean, they got nothing. And the stuff they got from the show, like a 10-minute clip of some bullcrap bit. We got full hours, man. We got all of our shows. So check it out, philhendryshow.com.
What are you talking about your dad?
You want to repeat the story?
No.
My father would say, this was in 1968, and I was in high school. So it was during the 1968 Democratic Convention, and it was on television. And for those of you who are familiar, the 68 Democratic Convention had all the yippies in the street, and there was all kinds of violence, and there was all kinds of cops cracking people's heads. And my dad was watching the conventions every night, as he did the Republican convention that year. And I remember him getting up from the dinner table and saying, I'm going to go watch these bastards tear themselves apart. Ha, 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 ha. And he went in there to watch.
What are you talking about, like Gore Vidal?
One of the networks, I forget which one, I think it might have been NBC. This was fantastic. For the whole week, they had Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley debating and sitting in the booth. I think it was for the whole week. I'm telling you, can you imagine that? Gore Vidal, William F. Buckley. Now, both those guys, one's a liberal, the other's a conservative. They're pretty much of equal intellect, although I'm sure their fans would disagree and say, no, the other guy's smarter. But, I mean, these guys are heavy hitters. And I'll never forget they were there, and that was part of the coverage, man. I mean, if you think about it right now, name for me in television, okay?
Yeah.
Two guys, woman, man, I don't care. Of equal value, intellect, I mean import, to Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley, that we could put on television and debate each other, sit and be the commentators for a political convention. Go ahead.
Sean Hannity and Alan Colm, probably.
Man, are you crazy? Sean Hannity and Alan Colm, are you an idiot or something?
They're pretty smart.
Yeah, they're pretty smart. That ain't Gore Vidal and William F. Buckley, man. I'm talking about two guys that have written more books than all of those cats put together. I mean, real books, you know, with like footnotes and indexes and stuff like that.
All right. What about, okay, Bill, well.
If you say Bill O'Reilly, I'm going to smack you.
Bill O'Reilly, ha, 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 ha. Man, that guy couldn't find it. He's dumb.
I'm waiting.
What about that one guy, Christopher Hitchens?
Okay, Christopher Hitchens. There, I'll give you Christopher Hitchens. Now, who on the liberal side? Because frankly, Christopher Hitchens, even though he's a self-described leftist, he's made a lot of enemies on that side because he was in favor of the American invasion of Iraq. He's in favor of the war on terror. I mean, he's totally quote unquote. There's all these stupid bastards like fat ass Michael Moore tried to debate. You imagine Michael Moore trying to debate Christopher Hitchens? He got his fat ass handed to him. So who's next?
What about Noam Chomsky?
Noam Chomsky and Christopher Hitchens. Now that would be good. That would be good.
And who's Noam Chomsky?
Noam and.
G-N-O-M-E.
Right. No. G-N-O-M-E.
M-N-O-M-E.
No, N-O-A-M. That's it. Christopher Hitchens and Noam Chomsky. The only problem is Noam Chomsky is not exactly what I would call, is he like, you know, real colorful? I don't know. Maybe he is.
I don't know who he is, man, but, you know.
Well, anyway. So that's what that was, and this is where we are, folks, in 2010. Noam Chomsky and Christopher Hitchens. Okay. World-famous Phil Henry Show here. Welcome back. TripAdvisor's top dirtiest hotels in the United States.
This ought to be good.
You really? Well, a lot of these places you guys have probably stayed in. Some hotels are just dirt cheap. Others are dirty and cheap.
Say that again.
Some hotels are dirt cheap. Others are dirty and cheap.
One more time.
Shut up. Some hotels are dirty and cheap. Travelers need to know the difference, which is why TripAdvisor, for the last 6 years, has published a list of America's top 10 dirtiest hotels based on cleanliness ratings posted by visitors to its website. Under each listing are selected comments from people who stayed at the hotel or the motel. Number 10 of the top 10 filthiest toilet bowls. And I forgot what you said to me, Rance. Should I read these in order, or does it matter? I think that I probably should read them in order. I think that's what he wanted me to do. All right. Number 10, read what's in front of me, so I read them in order. Econo Lodge, Newark International Airport, Elizabeth, New Jersey. Well, you know.
You ever fly out of Newark?
I flew out of Newark, yeah, and I don't want to say nothing, but a place called the Econo Lodge in Newark? I don't think so. Here's a comment. This place is nasty, nasty, nasty. Bed bugs, nasty carpet. Had location, this not a hotel. Bad location, this is not a hotel. This was the worst stay of my life. Never again. Please don't stay. 25 bed bug bites between the two of us. How do they know that it isn't just some guy, you know?
What are you talking about? I mean, what? The guy who has the competing Econo Lodge?
I don't know. I never trust these online reviews. How do you know it's not some competing business that hates the guy, and they go in and they just fill it up with all kinds of nasty stuff?
I think they got to, like log in or something.
Well, so what if you got to log in? Anybody can log in. Anyway, here's number 9 of the filthiest, nastiest toilets, that is, hotels in America. Number 9, Palm Grove Hotel and Suites, Virginia Beach, Virginia. Comment. The elevators did not work, so we used the stairs. They were unbelievable, disgusting, smelled like urine, graffiti on the stairway walls, and absolutely filthy. One of our room keys didn't work. Luckily, we had two. Luckily, that should have been a tip for you to turn around and run.
Yeah, it's either lucky they had two. You would have been lucky if they had none.
No key would be lucky.
Right. Anyway, one of our room keys didn't work. Luckily, we had two. The room was gross. There was sand all through the tub, dirt on the bathroom floor, paint peeling from the ceiling. At some point, you got to turn around and say, I wouldn't stay in this toilet bowl. That is a place called the Palm Grove Hotel and Suites in Virginia Beach. How'd you like to be the guy that owns that dump today?
What would you do?
If I own that place?
Yeah.
I'd bring the bulldozers in tomorrow. It would be remodel time, man.
Yeah, but you got to have a lot of money to do that.
Well, I'm assuming I'd have a couple of bucks if I owned a whole hotel. Number 8. I knew we'd have to get around to the Super 8. You know, Super 8, what are you going to do, man? You know, anytime somebody's going to put a list like this together, you guys know you're going to be on it. Number 8, the Super 8 in Estes Park, Denver, Colorado. Oh, my God.
What? Let me see. Oh, my God.
Well, let me see. Oh, my God.
Let me see. Oh, wait a minute. I was the guy that started. Anyway, Super 8 Estes Park, Denver, Colorado. There was mouse feces located around the base of the bathroom.
What's that?
It's mouse crap, man.
Oh.
All the pillows smelled like smoke and greasy hair. Each of the comforters had large stains on them when pulled back, and it was so very obvious they had not been laundered in a long time. So gross. Wow. I mean, you're not going to stay there, man.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do?
I'd leave, man. I'd sleep in my car. Of course, if you got a bunch of kids, I got to tell you something. You know, more and more, man, I'll just tell you this, but more and more these days, if you have a big family and you want to stay somewhere, you know, Embassy Suites, Marriott Suites, you got to go for these little suites places because they're well-priced. They're clean. They're run by very reputable chains. What's the other one?
Radisson.
Radisson, I think, has a suites style. These are the ones you got to do, you know.
What do you mean by suite?
Well, it has the bedroom separate from there's a little living room. Holiday Inn, are those good suites? You got to go for that. If you have a family, if you got four or five, whatever you're doing, traveling with your kids, okay. If it's you and your wife, same thing, man. Why even mess around with this toilet? I mean, how broke are you, man? If you're that broke and it's just you and your old lady, excuse my French, sleep in your frickin' car, man.
Yeah, but I mean, that's not comfortable either.
I'd rather sleep in my car, man, than sleep in some dump with mouse crap laying around.
Is that the mouse fault or what?
What do you mean, is that the mouse fault?
What do you mean?
Well,
it's the... What do you mean it's the mouse fault? What are their mice doing in there in the first place?
That's where they live.
Well, they ain't living in no hotel room that I'm renting. Number 7, the Roadway Inn in Williamsville, New York. There were... Here's the comments about this this dump. There were crusty white... Oh, God.
Are you kidding me?
No. Crusty white stains on the blankets and the sheets. Filthy, dirty, smelly, worn, dirty... See, that's where I think they're overdoing a little bit. That's two dirties. Anyway, worn, dirty, oily-looking furniture. Carpeting throughout this place is soiled, stained, and filthy. Williamsville, New York, the Roadway Inn.
I mean, you wonder, why do people do that?
I mean, that's a great question. That's a great question. You have a motel, or you have one of these little inns, and it's well-known. The name is, you know, Roadway, that's a known name. Super 8 is a known name. Econolodge. Why don't you go and scrub the filth out of the place? What is it with these people that own these places that they think it's like printing money? They'll just let people come in, stay in your filthy, you know, people would be doing you a favor, man, if they burned a place to the ground.
You better watch out, man. It's going to happen. A guy's going to blame you.
Number 6, the Atlantic Beach Hotel, Miami Beach, Florida. Oh, this ought to be good. Here are the comments about the Atlantic Beach Hotel in Miami Beach, Florida. Do not enter. First night we checked in, our room smelled like dirty wet towels. The shower curtain had an unidentified gelatinous substance. Ah! The air conditioner wasn't working and being held up by tape. There was a big hole in the wall. The sheets weren't cleaned. Oh, my God. I know that smell, too, man. Everything in Miami's got that, you know, like there's something wet, you know?
Yeah, no, like, if you turn the air off, man.
That's why that, see, that happened to me one time.
What did?
If you turn the air conditioning off, see, in Miami, you got to keep the air conditioning on all the time, man. I mean, when it's hot, all the time when it's humid.
Why?
Because if you don't, then it heats up in your house, and the next thing you got is this slime on your wall, man. Don't ask me what that is, but it's just slime.
I don't understand.
I don't either, but I made a big mistake one weekend. I made a huge mistake, one that I would never make again. I left town for the weekend, and I left my air conditioning off, and it was the month of July. And when I came back, there was mold all over my walls.
What do you mean by mold?
There were black splotches all over my walls. There was slime on the bathroom and kitchen floor. I mean, it was funky, Jack. And what I did... first thing I had to do was clean the place top to bottom. I had to get all the slime off there. Then I started to try to scrub the walls down when I realized with bleach. And when I realized that wasn't going to happen, I literally went to the to my building manager, and I said, I need my apartment painted, you know.
So you had to paint to get rid of the mold?
Pretty much. And then my clothes, dude, my clothes were all, like, messed up. I had to put all that stuff to the laundry. Don't, if you live in Miami and it gets humid, don't ever turn your air conditioner off. All right, we'll be back with more of the filthiest toilet bowl hotels in America as we work our way to number 1 on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Oh, man, man.
Where's that Super 8, man? Because I'm going to be going through town.
Yeah.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
No. The 70s all about disco.
No, that's the people. No, the 70s was not all about disco. Robert's asking me about the 70s. How did we get on the 70s?
You were talking about that when Sturman at your apartment?
Oh, yeah. Well, I lived in Orlando in the 70s. I got into radio, and I was in my 20s, very, very young, and I was living in all these different apartments. You know, Orlando in the 70s was like the capital of, it seemed like it was the capital of singles apartments places. And anyway, and there's a lot of palmetto bugs and all this crap. And well, these are very clean apartments, but they had an exterminator coming in once a week. Well, I was working overnight shifts. I was doing all kinds of different shifts. And so the exterminator woman would just, you know, walk in, man. I'm trying to crash. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm out like a light at 10 o'clock in the morning when you're working an overnight shift. Exterminator, and she comes spraying that crap everywhere, you know.
She sprayed on top of you?
I don't know, man. Some mornings, I don't even remember her coming in. Maybe she did just take it and spray it all over me because she hated me.
You said you thought she wanted to see you nude.
I was kidding. Nude. And no, there wasn't nothing but disco in the 70s. A lot of stuff. All right, let me get back to the list of the filthiest hotels in America. I almost feel like we need some music. And here, you know, this, I've always been wondering, I'm waiting for a time when we could use this, and I think the time, there you go, Twin Peaks. Now then, now that sucks. All right, number six, did we do the Atlantic Beach Motel? Did we do that?
I don't know.
Yeah, we did that. All right, number five, the Polynesian Beach and Golf Resort, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Well, now, don't that sound like just a treat, huh?
Sound pretty nice to me.
Oh, yeah. The Polynesian Beach and Golf Resort, quote, the pool was so nasty, I would not let the kids in. There were big water bugs, but worse, when we were in the shower or asleep, we heard a cat in the ceiling stuck.
What?
A cat was in the ceiling. I hate to tell you this, lady. It was a rat. Oh.
Are you kidding me? Something that big?
I don't know. Number four, Hotel Carter, New York City. Now, why would you think there's a rotten hotel in New York? Yes, there is. Here's a quote. When we heard we were getting a hotel a half a block from Times Square, we knew it wouldn't be the Westin. We also didn't expect black mold in the showers, blood on the bed, and rats scratching all night. You got to be really stupid, though, if you're getting a hotel near Times Square and you don't get a good hotel, because there's some damn good hotels at Times Square.
Well, yeah, where do you stay?
I stay at the W, and the W is perfect for me. I love it. And it's a great hotel, and the rooms are kooky and bitchin', and the view is fantastic, and the place is nice. Number three, the Desert Inn Resort in Daytona Beach, Florida. Never mind a ridiculous name for a hotel in Daytona Beach called the Desert Inn. Quote, I was sitting on the bed talking to my husband, and up the back of the chair ran a roach. Not a palmetto bug, a German coach roach. They come from filth. The room we stayed in smelled like a combination of mold, mildew, dampness, smoke, and stale beer. The ceiling was peeling. The walls were cracked. There were cigarette burns throughout the room. Number two, the Jack London Inn in Oakland. Poor Jack London, man.
Yeah, they name a hotel after a guy that stinks.
The rooms displayed a level of filth and discomfort that mere neglect could never produce. The parking lot resembled a post-apocalyptic junkyard. The halls reeked of cigarette smoke, body odor, and failure. Now, who? I think Jack London was staying in his own hotel. It's very poetic. Commuter.
Who's Jack London?
He's a writer, man.
You don't know who Jack London is? You're an idiot.
You don't know who he is either, man.
Hold on. He's a writer, man. He was a great writer. He wrote Call of the Wild, and he's from Oakland, California. So that's particularly poignant. Commuter rail trains, horns blasting, passed the hotel every few minutes. The hotel was not clean, bed bugs, towels had stains on them, carpet was very wet when we arrived, and not from carpet cleaner.
What's that mean?
I don't want to know. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the number one funkiest, nastiest, most jacked up hotel. Good, bud.
I like it.
The worst hotel in America, the filthiest hotel in America, the Grand Resort Hotel and Convention Center, Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. Now, let me tell you why I know this, because I'm a little bit of a gospel music fan. I'm not a religious guy, but I like gospel music. And it just so happens that they have a gospel music convention at Grand Resort Hotel and Convention Center, Pigeon Forge. There was dirt at least a half inch thick in the bathtub, which was filled with lots of dark hair. And let me tell you what, I'm a blonde. Anyway, if you're looking for a hotel with, quote, pubic hair stuck to the bathroom floor in some unidentifiable gelatinous liquid, chewing tobacco, spit oozing down the wall and corridors, spider activity making webs in every corner of your room, carpeting so greasy and dirty you wouldn't want to sit your luggage down, let alone walk around barefoot, dingy bed sheets and towels as rough and thin as sandpaper, and a room so putrid and smelly it causes a gag reflex when you walk in, baby, the Grand Resort is a place you'll love.
That's what it says.
No, man. It says, but you'll love the Grand Resort Hotel. The number one funkiest, nastiest. Oh, baby. All right, coming up, Rick Sanchez did something that is, we think it's a little sad. He stayed at the Grand. No, he didn't. We'll tell you what it was. It isn't that sad. World famous Phil Henry Show. PhilHenryShow.com. Visit the website. Or stay at our website.
Phil Henry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Head on over to our website. Every night after the show, we post a show log to tell you what kind of falderall we got into. And that is the case tonight. In fact, we've actually had a very early entry into our show log. Jason Smith, who's a guy that does some artwork for us, I guess you could say. And Jason's also a guy who runs an unofficial chat room. Good guy, and a lot of good people over in that chat that Jason runs. He did a picture of me he's got a picture of me that he's sort of photoshopped. Looks like I'm the engineer on.
Looks like a monorail.
It's like a bullet train. Anyway, it's part of our show log on the homepage there at philhenryshow.com. There's all kinds of blog posts there. There's all kinds of classic podcasts you can access. There's our Phil Rants, which are accessible there on our homepage. Our recent shows, or you can go into the archives, recent archives, or the classic archives. There's a list of all of our affiliates. And, of course, there's our shop. Right now we have our classic CDs there, but soon to arrive,
man, that is bitchin',
is our shot glass, which I'm showing to you guys on our video cast. This is sweet, this shot glass.
How do you know you talk about it's going to be in this dishwasher?
Hey, bud, what did I tell you, man?
No, it's dishwasher safe.
It's dishwasher safe. This thing, this ain't no cheap. Everything we do is first rate. And the Phil Henry Show shot glass is first ticket, baby, all the way. Even acetone, man, you can't take that off. This is our classic shot glass, which we started, we invented, me. Remember, it's all about me, I. We're complete narcissists. We're totally psychopathic. Thank you.
And now back to Phil Henry.
Thanks. All right, 877-876, our number. But before we even consider taking any phone calls, which we probably won't do, a car salesman, and at first blush, and I don't know why people say at first blush, it sounds a little fey.
Not like they put on makeup.
At first blush, this story sounds unfair. But I have to tell you, I like this story, and here's why. The headline says, car salesman fired for sporting a Packers tie in honor of his grandmother's death. Now, right away, we want to feel bad for the man because his grandmother died. And, of course, I understand. Now, the dealership does promotions for the Chicago Bears. John Stone said that when he went to work on Monday morning at Webb Chevrolet in Oaklawn, he decided to wear a Green Bay Packer tie. He's had this Green Bay Packer tie for years to honor his late grandmother, who was a huge Packer fan. Little did he know that the seemingly innocent gesture would cost him his job. Stone said that when he showed up at work, General Manager Jerry Roberts called him over to the office and then ordered him to take off the Packer tie or else he'd be fired. Stone said he thought Roberts was joking and went back to work. Right there, that's bullcrap.
What are you talking about, man?
Why do you say that?
Because that's horse crap. I don't believe that. That's too convenient for this guy. Oh, I think he's joking. I'm going to go back. Take off the Packer tie or you're fired, and then he's going to go back and ignore the guy. There's a whole bunch of stuff that we don't know about. We don't know about this man's relationship with this company. We don't know about this man's work ethic. We don't know about anything. An hour later, Stone said Roberts came to the showroom floor and again demanded he take off the tie. When he didn't, he was fired. So you're told twice to take off the Packer tie, and he didn't, so he's fired. The first time he thought he was kidding. Okay, let's say I believe that story.
Well, man, why don't you have some sympathy for the guy? His grandmother died.
I understand that, but you got to understand something. The whole world doesn't stop because our personal lives are suddenly impacted negatively. It just doesn't happen. We'd like it to. We wish it would. Maybe we'd even like to have a law passed that says that when something happens to us that hurts us, the whole world stops and acknowledges and everything just comes to a screeching halt. That's not the way reality works. You got to suck it up and move forward because the rest of the world don't care. See, this is one of the things that I think the existential reality of life is being ignored increasingly by a current generation of Americans. The existential reality of life. What do I mean by that?
I don't know. What does it mean? Existential is that?
That's part of a car.
What is?
The existential.
Are you being serious?
I don't know.
The existential is part of a car.
Yeah.
You talking about the differential?
I don't know.
The existential reality of life is the following thing. Franz Kafka wrote about it. Jean-Paul Sartre wrote about it. Don't ask me what they did. And it is the following thing. The world doesn't care about you. Now, doesn't that sound harsh?
Sounds really mean.
Oh, well, you can look at it that way. You can, I'm really mean. Or you can say, well, that's the way it is. Because frankly, we don't care about the world.
What do you mean?
I mean, as uncaring and as unfeeling as the world is toward us, that's exactly how we are. When someone is hurt, when someone is suffering, certainly we want to try to help. We all have the humanity to want to help. But the fact is, if that person goes down for the count, if their world falls apart, you know, we tried, but we move on because we've got other things that we have to do. You know, lucky me, too bad for them. That's how we look at life. And that's how life looks at us. And what happens, and I don't know where the disconnect, I like this word disconnect. I got your disconnect swinging. Here's a disconnect for you. Here's reality, and here's where a lot of people are. And Jack, those two things ain't going together.
Well, man, I don't understand you saying, like, people should be kind to each other and everything.
There's all kinds of what people ought to do, Robert. You know, people should be kind, people should be this, people should be that. Like the man said, it ought to rain whiskey. Well, it don't. Do it.
Uh-uh.
All right. So here's a guy, he lost his grandma. I feel bad for you. It's tough. I'm sure she meant a lot to you, and to that extent, I certainly can commiserate. But the fact is, the guy told you to take your tie off, not once, but twice. John Stone, who was fired for his Packers tie, which he wore to honor his recently deceased grandmother, but let's make sure we get that part of the story out there. Otherwise, the guy has no defense at all. And here he is talking to WGN TV.
Middle of the showroom floor says, take your tie off or you're fired. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, Jerry, can I just zip it up? You're fired. Get out. My grandmother loved the Green Bay Packers. Packers was her team. I don't know why. She lived in Chicago, but she loved the Green Bay Packers. I love you, Grandma, and I love my Packers.
And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, big deal. Anyway, here is the dealership GM, Jerry Roberts, telling WGN why he can stone.
You actually fired a guy for wearing a Green Bay Packers tie?
Correct. I don't feel that it was appropriate for him to go directly in contrast with an advertising campaign that we spend a lot of money on.
Were there customers complaining?
Not yet, but it was early in the day, and we weren't going to give them the opportunity to do so either.
Stone, by the way, that question, the customer's complaining, that's not what it's about, lady. He's the boss. This is the promotion. The company is putting their effort and their money and their time and their energies into this promotion, and the dude's going against the thing and the guy, and he's fired. See?
Were the customers complaining?
What has that got to do with anything? Maybe in the world of television and radio, if the customers complain, like the listeners and the viewers, yeah, we sweat bullets, don't we? Well, not in that business. Unless, of course, they sell them a car and there's no engine in it or something like that.
Yeah, that they would complain then, right?
Of course. That would be grounds for a complaint.
If you sell them a car with no engine?
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
All right. Stone says his GM never told him about the Bears' promotion.
If I hadn't never wore this tie, I wouldn't have known his true feelings about me, I figure. It is because I never had a chance. He never pulled me to the side. Say, hey, John, you know we have a contract with the Bears. This being inappropriate for you to wear this tie. If he had to say that to me, I would have took the tie off.
Wait a minute, man. He asked you twice. Our young people today, man. Our young people today.
Why are you blaming young people, man?
All right, old people today. Everybody. There seems to be a sense in the country, old and young. Oh, well, You're the boss? Yes, I am the boss. And what did you want me to do? Take the tie off. Okay, well, how about if we negotiate? No, man. No. Let's negotiate. My grandmother died. I didn't know there was a Bears promotion. No, you didn't need to know if there's a Bears promotion. You heard me say, take the tie off, didn't you?
Yeah.
Then take it off. What do you mean, my underwear? You're going to turn this into sexual harassment? Maybe.
That'd be funny if he did that. You go to the police, say, he told me to take my underwear off, even though it was a tie.
Yeah, that'd work real good, bud.
I don't know, man. I don't know why he has to do it.
Are you crazy?
No.
If I told you, Robert, right now, you see that shirt you're wearing?
Yeah.
Now, it wouldn't be fair of me to say for you you can't wear it now, but if I told you not to come back to work tomorrow wearing that red T-shirt that you're wearing right now,
yeah,
and you came back with a red T-shirt, this is what I do. I'd say, you heard me yesterday, right? And you'd say, yeah. What would you say?
If I came back with a red T-shirt, then I didn't hear you.
So I am correct in assuming that if I told you not to wear a red T-shirt to work tomorrow, you wouldn't come back wearing a red T-shirt.
Well, that's not true unless he didn't hear you.
Yeah.
What?
If I didn't hear you.
What do you mean if you didn't hear me? You're standing there talking to me, right?
Yeah.
And I say, don't come back to work tomorrow wearing that red... You guys are going to kill me.
Here, have some coffee.
Don't push it into my mouth, man. If I said, don't come back to work tomorrow wearing a red T-shirt, would you wear a red T-shirt?
No.
Okay. So I don't have to worry about you coming back to work tomorrow wearing a red T-shirt.
Unless I forgot...
What if you forgot? All right, let's say you did. Let's say you came back wearing a red T-shirt, okay?
All right.
I'd say to you, what are you doing with a red T-shirt?
Because I don't want to be nude.
Because you don't want to be nude, okay. Excuse me, guys. So then I say to you, do you remember me telling you not to wear a red T-shirt? And you'd say no, right?
Yeah.
I'd say, well, I did. So here's what I want you to do, Robert, because it's early in the day, and because you only live two blocks away, would you change that shirt, please?
Why do I got to do that?
See, you just asked me the wrong question, man.
What do you mean?
That's the wrong question to ask your boss. Why do I got to do that? I told you yesterday, and I'm telling you again today, I don't want you wearing a red T-shirt.
Yeah, but why?
I'm not going to tell you why. How about that?
What if it's the only shirt he's got?
If it's the only shirt he's got, then it's the only shirt he's got. All right. Now you come back, you're still wearing a red T-shirt, you're fired.
Yeah, but that's not what happened to that guy. That guy,
yes, it's what happened to him. He said that the guy told him twice, two times, to take off the damn shirt. Oh, God, I'm choking to death over here. All right, well, I ain't buying it, man. See, what I do, and what I think everybody should do, you got to look deeper into these stories. You have to look at a news story as if you have to assume when you read a news story that they're lying to you. You have to, because understand that you're being manipulated into a point of view. That news story was designed to manipulate you and me into a certain point of view. Oh, the poor guy. I understand that, and I feel bad for that guy, but... We all have to work for a living, and we all got to do what the boss says. And if the guy you don't do, then you don't do. All right, a Utah state trooper is in hot water for hitting a 53-year-old woman in the head after a traffic stop. That's very unfair. I think the trooper ought to be given a medal. I'm kidding. But did she deserve it? We'll find out. The Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
We got a couple of stories to catch up on. Rick Sanchez, recently fired by CNN, was interviewed by Rumor Fix and was asked, would you be interested in Keith Olbermann's job? And he said, yes, he would be. And I felt a little bad for Rick. I don't think he should have given that interview, Rick, and I don't think he should have said what you said. Because you're not going to get that job. They're going to move their fair-haired people in those positions. And as deserving as you may be, Rick, I think you got to lay low, brother. And, you know, what Sanchez did, he made a stupid comment, and it's ultra stupid. Look, if I know it's stupid, and I'm talking about now how, you know, something I would not say because I want to hold on to my job, right?
Yeah.
All right. I would never say that, man. I mean, right, wrong, or indifferent. I know saying that what he said is dumb. And why? I could go into reasons why, but the fact is, as a newsman, you laugh about the historic oppression of Jews, and it's very real. And Jack, your ass is grass. Anyway, he was interviewed, and he said he'd considered taking over for MSNBC anchor Keith Olbermann, who abruptly left the network on Friday. He was abruptly fired on Friday. Let's just call a you-know-what, okay? Rumor fix. Sanchez got canned. Olbermann got canned. I've been canned. There's two kinds of people in this business, the people that have been fired and the people that, haven't been fired yet. The Cuban-born newsman would not comment on whether he's been approached by MSNBC to return to the news deck. No, he hasn't. But if offered Olbermann's job, Sanchez tells us it would be worth considering. The former CNN anchor had nothing but praise for MSNBC's highest-rated host, which is quite gracious, considering Olbermann slammed Sanchez, calling him a dirty spick. No, he didn't. I'm kidding.
Man, you get in trouble for that.
I'm kidding. October the 1st, 2010. Keith is a great broadcaster. He gets it. There's a nuance to his message that will likely be missed. Nuance? All right, so you're not going to get that gig, Rick. And since he says he's turned down several job offers, telling Rumor Fix he wants to return to broadcasting, but the right thing hasn't come along yet. He's looking for national is what he's looking for, you know.
What do you think?
He's looking for a national gig. And he's probably been offered a lot of local. I bet you money he's been offered local back in Miami. Or maybe even local in Atlanta. But here are the nominees for the whole damn thing. This is the Oscars. Best Picture, 127 hours, about the guy that had to hack off his own arm. Black Swan, I don't know, that's about a, what's that about?
I think that's about a ballerina.
A ballerina. Inception, which I tweeted today, is boring as hell. I found the first half hour so dull, I had to turn it off and, like, just take handfuls of speed, man.
Really?
No, not really, but I thought it sucked. The Fighter, which I hear is good, ain't seen it. The Kids Are All Right, which I hear is good, ain't seen it. The King's Speech, great movie. Social Network, great movie. Toy Story 3, Toy Story 3, which I hear is good, I ain't seen it. True Grit, great movie.
Which one would you vote for the movie of the whole of the Oscar?
Which movie would I vote for of the whole of the Oscar? I would vote for... I can't, because I ain't seen them all, man.
What about Inception?
Yeah, Inception. I just got done saying it sucked, man. Oh. Of the ones that I saw, I would give it to King's... I'd give it to True Grit.
What? What about Social Network?
Social Network was great. Social Network kicked ass. There's no question. I don't know. You know what I liked about True Grit? The photography. And I guess it's because it was outdoors. You know...
Well, if that's it, man, then Social Network ain't never had a chance because that was all indoors.
Yeah, they mostly shot Social Network indoors.
Yeah, I know they shot it indoors.
Why is that?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe because most of the stuff took place indoors.
Yeah. I mean, but it's possible someone could take place outdoors.
What?
The stuff on Social Network.
Some of it could have taken place. Yes, some of it could have taken place outdoors. You know, but I don't think it took place outdoors in spectacular settings like, you know, the beautiful stuff they had in True Grit.
Well, you don't know unless they went on a camping trip.
Because trust me, man. Social Network, it was all indoors. And if they did anything outdoors, it wasn't out in the beautiful plains of Montana with the starlit sky at night. You guys are crazy. Social Network was great, though, and I like both of those young actors are terrific. Here's the Best Actor nominees, Jeff Bridges, Javier Bardem, that guy's the best. Jesse Eisenberg for Social Network, Javier Bardem for Beautiful, Colin Firth, fantastic, and James Franco. I ain't seen Javier Bardem, but I can tell you, that guy knocks it out of the park every time. So I'd say, just having not, I've seen all of these actors except for Franco.
So what do you think?
Well, Jason just told me that he says Franco is brilliant in 127 hours, so now I know he probably sucked. And
oh man,
I'm kidding around, but no way would I vote for him. It's either Colin Firth, or Javier Bardem. Actress, Annette Bening, Nicole Kidman, Jennifer Lawrence, Natalie Portman, Michelle Williams, who cares? And then, I'm kidding. I didn't see any of these guys. All right, Christian Bale, John Hawks, Jeremy Renner, Mark Ruffalo. You know, these, I'll tell you the actors that I like here. Jeremy Renner, fantastic. Mark Ruffalo, fantastic. Jeffrey Rush, fantastic. Christian Bale, fantastic. John Hawks, never heard of him.
Are you kidding me? You must have heard about him.
I heard of him. I just didn't see it. All right. I can keep giving you all of these people's names. Helena Bonham Carter was out of sight, man, in that King's Speech. I never really liked her because she was always in those, what were those movies she was in?
Yeah, she's all like that, like, what do you call Ivory Merchant?
Ivory Merchant, all that jazz. Who cares? And so I never liked her. And then I saw her in this King's Speech. I said, oh, God, she's a great actress. So I'm a big fan of hers now. Haley Steinfeld in True Grit was something else, man. I mean, she held her own with some heavy hitters. And that kid was great. I don't know how old she is, but I definitely have to put her up there. But, you know, not having seen Animal Kingdom, which I thought was a cartoon.
Isn't it?
No, it's a...
I thought it was a TV show.
Right. Best animated picture, How to Train Your Dragon, and that's a euphemism for your, you know...
Oh.
No, it isn't. Toy Story 3, The Illusionist. Best director, Darren Aronofsky for Black Swan, David Fincher for The Social Network, Tom Hooper for The King's Speech, Joel and Ethan Coen, True Grit, and David O. Russell. What are the best director to two guys?
Yeah, that's not even fair because there's two guys that did it, and that makes it easier.
I thought one of the guys was the director and the other guy was a producer.
No, they get both of them.
That's weird. God, is that weird. And the best director, it's almost like they come up with two heads or something. And finally, best documentary feature. Nobody watches those. No, Exit Through the Gift Shop, which is a euphemism for...
Your girlfriend.
Yeah, just shut up. Exit Through the Gift Shop, Gasland, Inside Job, Restrepo. I hear that's very good. I didn't want to see that because I thought they were bagging on the troops, and I hear it's fantastic. And Wasteland, which is the story of what's between Bud Dickman's ears. All right, the Phil Henry Show.
Shut up.
PhilHenryShow.com. That's PhilHenryShow.com. Rick Johnson, thank you. Dan Northcraft, thank you. Jason Rance, thank you.
Phil Henry.